Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the one and only Michael Savage. Of course, we're going to follow up with yesterday's show with a couple of questions. I know many of you are anxious to call, and you're entitled to do so at 1-800-449-8255. I considered yesterday's show my finest hour. I know many of you considered it my worst hour. But I want to begin today's program on the Savage Nation by asking a loaded question, which is this. Is Timothy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, a secret Muslim? Now, the reason I ask that is because according to Sharia finance laws, it is illegal and immoral and possibly even fattening to charge usury or any interest. Muslims do not believe in charging interest on loan money. And since Timothy Geithner refuses to permit any interest to be granted for anyone who invests in savings accounts or in banks, interest rates are at a near zero level for the first time in American history. And therefore, we can only assume that Timothy Geithner is practicing Sharia finance law by not charging any interest on the money. And therefore, we legitimately ask, is he secretly a Muslim? This is the Savage Nation. Now, here is an email from a friend of mine, and I don't know whether to read. First, I'll read the email. Michael, yesterday's was not only one of your best shows ever. Frankly, it was some of the most sizzling, compelling radio I've ever heard in my life. It was more of a brilliant lecture than a talk show. The way you laid out the description of a Christian terrorist and compared, juxtaposed it with Muslim extremists and Islamofascists was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I was telling Beowulf yesterday how I can't bear to listen to others. The other shows are torture to get through 5 minutes with these guys, endlessly mouthing stupid, predictable GOP talking points. Debt ceiling all day, nonstop, boring, stale, phony. What happened in Norway is Europe's grim future. These Beltway-obsessed idiots are either too ignorant or cowardly or politically correct, probably all three, to see reality staring right at them. Please, Michael, whatever you do, America needs you to keep on doing it more than ever. There are only a handful of truly courageous conservative nationalists left in what passes for the American right, and you're at the very top. Congrats on a dynamite show. And that leads me to the following, which is on nationalism. I was reading an article in the Encyclopedia Britannica about Ho Chi Minh, who fought against the French, And of course, fought against the United States military during the Vietnam War. He was a brilliant guerrilla leader and certainly conducted his share of atrocities and terrorism. And yet, the Encyclopedia Britannica entry, which is quite well written, describes Ho Chi Minh as a nationalist leader in somewhat glowing terms, a man who overthrew the yokes of colonialism to free the Vietnamese people. Likewise, the left wing seems to glorify other nationalist figures who are also mass murderers or terrorists, such as Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, even Fidel Castro. They have nothing but admiration for left-wing nationalist figures who are known to have committed mass murders and atrocities. And yet, if anyone here in America dares to speak about borders, language, and culture, which is, of course, a call for increased respect for our own national identity and borders, we are smeared in every conceivable way by the very same left-wing vermin who glorify Ho Chi Minh, Fidel Castro, Joseph Stalin, and any other so-called socialist, communist, nationalist leader. A very curious situation, is it not? And yet it is only a revived awareness of and respect for, even love for, the United States of America and its national identity, history, and sovereignty that can save this nation from absorption into the socialist New World Order. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of my monologue on nationalism and nationalists. Today we're going to talk about the Norway murders again, and we're going to talk about the disconnect in my audience where if a person of a certain faith conducts a despicable crime, suddenly they claim he was never of our faith. It happened a few weeks ago with the a Jewish man, the Orthodox Jewish man in Brooklyn, who kidnapped, tortured, and dismembered a little Jewish boy. Do you remember I got calls from Jews in Brooklyn who said he was not really Jewish? He was not really Orthodox? He was a convert? In other words, they were in total denial. They assume falsely, by the way, that anyone who is religious is incapable of atrocities. They're totally wrong. You know, many decades ago, there was a Yiddish writer by the name of Isaac Bashevis Singer who wrote some phenomenal stories about the life of religious Jews. And they were semi-comic. And his point was that underneath the religious garb and underneath the rituals, they were simply men. And men could be saints or sinners or a combination of both. In other words, they were human beings. And that goes right back to the slaughter in Norway. He's an extreme example of a sinner, a mass murderer at that. Nevertheless, that doesn't mean he's not a Christian. What kind of logical insanity is this, that if someone commits a violent sin, they're no longer a Christian? After all, Christianity is all about redeeming the sinner. And therefore, all of you who are arguing with me that he's not a Christian because he did this, don't even understand your own religion. You don't understand your own religion. If you are saying that religious people understand Christianity and religious people believe that we're all sinners, isn't that the basic tenet of Christianity, that we're all sinners? Well, it's only through Jesus that you can be redeemed. Isn't that what Christians believe? But it doesn't mean that you cease being a sinner the minute you become a Christian. In fact, you're still a sinner. We're flawed creatures. We're fallen angels. We're not God. We're not saints. And therefore, to say all of a sudden that just because you go through the ritual of a religion, you eat the wafer or you wear the talis or you hold the Torah, that suddenly you're a saint. Nothing can be further from the truth. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Let's go to New York. Let's start with Crystal. You're on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, my idea was that perhaps this individual, I mean, he claims to be a Christian, and I believe that he thinks he is a Christian, and he may very well be, but I don't believe that he committed these murders, this atrocity, necessarily for that reason, that he did it for political reasons. I mean, the people in the party may
Well, of course, have... there's two different discussions that you just presented. I never said he did so because he was a Christian. I said he did so because he was a nationalist, number one, an ultra-nationalist who believed that Norway's identity was being destroyed by massive immigration, which it is, and that the greatest number of immigrants are Muslims, which they are, and they refuse to assimilate, which is true, and therefore he went crazy and he started killing. The problem is, unfortunately, he was also a Christian with much Christian identity and Christian symbolism. I don't know how that can even be argued about.
Exactly. You're right. I mean, I know what I know about the Norway from listening to you. I'm driving on my way home from work every day and I listen to you. And I agree with what you're saying. He did lose it. He did the reasons for political reasons, the murders. But the argument that he's a Christian.
But it's the same with the Jewish guy in Brooklyn 3 weeks ago. Remember the one who grabbed that poor little innocent boy off the streets and drugged him up and tortured him and then dismembered him? And then I had Jewish people calling and saying, but he wasn't really one of us. He wasn't Jewish. That's utter nonsense. Of course he was Jewish.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that you said that.
No. What I'm saying is you don't lose your religion the minute you conduct an atrocity. It doesn't suddenly disavow you of the religion. Of course, it's not in the tenet of the religion to conduct yourself that way. But it doesn't mean that you weren't a blankety-blank before the atrocity.
Exactly. If you say that he's not a Christian, you have to ask for forgiveness, and then you're still a Christian. I mean, that's okay.
Well, and that leads us to the next question, which is going to be the most difficult question that any Christian listener has ever heard on the talk radio. And I don't mean this to be facile or to be provocative, although provocation is part of my job. But I'll ask the question. If you truly believe that you are a devout Christian, and one of the tenets of your Christianity is a belief in redemption, wouldn't you believe that Jesus would accept this Norwegian murderer? Not accept him, but what would he do? Would he grant him redemption? If Jesus was on the earth, would he grant this Norwegian killer redemption, or would he call for his death? See, this is an interesting point. This is not to deny that the act was a political act, which it was. It was not a Christian act. It was a political act. And so we have to understand this from many different points of view. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, my mother, rest in peace, said don't ever talk about, religion. Because people are going to get mad at you. And yet, I mean, we're talking about religion and you're getting mad at me. What's the word? Don't talk about politics or religion. If I followed that edict, I wouldn't be in business. I only talk about politics and religion. And speaking of politics and religion, one of the greatest scandals in American history is the Fast and Furious gun running scandal, which now leads right to Holder and Obama, according to the head of the ATF. I don't have the time to go into it right now. I know many of you have been following it. This could bring down the presidency. It's impeachable. If it turns out that Obama and Holder were directly involved, now I know that they have buffers. I mean, I've watched enough of the Mario Puzo trilogy to know that all men at the top have buffers. But the fact of the matter is now one of the buffers, it's like the Valachi papers, has come out and said that Holder and Obama absolutely knew about the gun running to Mexico where the guns were being sold to the cartels. This is going on and you don't know anything about it. But wait, it gets worse. If it can get worse than that, General Electric, Jeffrey Immelt is our jobs czar. His job as a jobs czar is to create jobs in America. And yet, Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric announced yesterday that he's going to move the General Electric X-ray division from Wisconsin to Beijing, China. And he's going to invest $2 billion of GE capital in China to build factories in China and train Chinese engineers for jobs in China. Now, I have got to ask you something. This, of course, is not only corruption of the worst kind. I believe it's a criminal act. And I believe that it's fair to say that Jeffrey Immelt is an economic terrorist. What do you mean by economic terrorist? A man who literally, pointedly destroys jobs in America. How in the world can you accept as a Democrat that Obama appoints the head of General Electric to be job czar, and you wake up one day and he takes a 115-year-old company from Wisconsin and he exports it to China, closing down the facility in Wisconsin and opens it up in China, and he's going to invest $2 billion in China to make sure that it's a state-of-the-art factory. To me, this is an act beyond anything I've ever seen. It's so cynical. It is impossible to believe that anybody could get away with this when they are screwing the American people in plain sight. And at the same time, they're a job czar. But wait, it gets worse. General Electric evaded taxes on its $5 billion profit in the United States last year. They paid zero taxes. Did you know that? So when Obama the liar gets up and says, I want to crack down on those corporate crooks who pay no income taxes, I guess he's talking about someone he knows, because GE pays no income taxes on the profits that they earn in America. Do you have any idea that this is the most corrupt administration in American history? Do you understand what you're living through? I mean, we can argue amongst ourselves about Jesus and about the Norway murderer all we want. This is the most corrupt, cynical administration in American history. Now, I got that out of my system, but you got to understand what I just told you is amazing. I want to play Stuart Varney, who's an analyst on Fox News, in clip 4. Listen to the summary.
First of all, what is Jeff Immelt doing? He runs GE. He's the president's jobs czar. Why is the president's jobs czar in his private enterprise life taking jobs out of America, high-tech jobs out of America, and going to China? That seems like a conflict to most people. Secondly, and here's where it gets very political, those jobs are being taken out of Wisconsin and going to China. Let's not forget that Republican Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin had a huge battle with the unions. The unions are allied with President Obama. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to think that maybe Jeff Immelt is grinding the president's axe, deliberately moving jobs out of Wisconsin to punish the Republicans in Wisconsin and sending them to China. Remember, Wisconsin is a swing state.
Yeah. Yep. So this is a very important story that you have to focus on. I know that Obama has a pattern, and his pattern is to shock you one day after another with one insult, one corruption after another, one scandal after another, so that you get overwhelmed and you don't know which way to turn. the gun scandal, the Fast and Furious gun scandal, where the ATF pointedly sold guns to Mexican cartels, mistakenly indeed, but they did so, which resulted in the death of a Border Patrol agent. That alone, if it leads up to Holder and Obama, as the head of the ATF is saying, is an impeachable offense. Remember, crimes and misdemeanors? Believe me, that is a crime and a misdemeanor. It's impeachable. That's number one. But now, to appoint a job czar like Jeffrey Immelt, who A, pays no taxes on GE's domestic profits here in America, and then to wake up and realize he's basically pillaging a 115-year-old X-ray division, the division from Wisconsin, and sending it to Beijing, China, and investing $2 billion in China is unbelievable. Listen to clip five.
GE is investing $2 billion in China for expansion there. That's in the interests of General Electric. But the other hat that Jeff Immelt wears is that of the president's jobs czar. Is that in the interests of America? Is that in President Obama's interests? There's a conflict here that's a mile wide. And I tell you, there are some people calling for Immelt's resignation from the president's jobs council.
Well, I would go farther than his resignation, okay? But I'm not a man in any power. I will tell you this. What you're learning about General Electric is very important because the government media complex is something I have specialized in for a long period of time. General Electric is the parent company of NBC, which owns that despicable box of hate called MSNBC. Again, it's owned by this propagandist. It's unbelievable to me how you don't see the connection. 1-800-449-8255. And yet I know all you want to do is talk about the shooter in Norway. And that's understandable because it's a mass murder. And most of you are in denial because I said he was a Christian terrorist, which is fundamentally absolutely factual. He was Christian and he was a terrorist. How could you argue with me? Why don't you just say, yes, he was a Christian and he was a terrorist, but he didn't represent Christianity at its best. He represented Christianity at its worst. And let's move on. But no, you're stuck. You believe that because you take the wafer and you suddenly say you're a Christian, you're automatically a good person. That's not true. You're not automatically anything. You're still just a person. The world is filled with people who are religious who are bad.
Savage.
All right, so we're talking about the Norway massacre. We're talking about General Electric moving jobs from Wisconsin to China. We're talking about the corruption of the Obama administration with regard to the job situation, with regard to the gun running scandal into Mexico. There's one scandal after another. And what amazes me is how when they own news outlets like GE owns MSNBC and NBC, which are nothing but wholly owned propaganda platforms for the far left. You have a guy, there's a member of Congress, most of the Democrats are by action socialists. They don't even know it, many of them. They're actually so uneducated, they don't even understand that they are active socialists. They don't know it. But one of them knows that he's a socialist, and he identifies himself as the only member of Congress who is a socialist. And his name is Bernie Sanders. He's from Brooklyn, claims he's from Vermont, and I suppose he actually lives there. But Bernie Sanders is a senator from Brooklyn who lives in Vermont. And listen to him now railing into those who don't want higher taxes. Listen to this.
Most people who are calling my office now are really not worried about presidential politics. What they are worried about is the collapse of the middle class, the increase in poverty, the growing gap between the very rich and everybody else. A deficit reduction debate right now, which is moving in exactly the opposite direction of where the American people want to go. Recently, 72% of the American people said they thought wealthy people should pay more in taxes to help us with deficit reduction. They also said in very strong terms, they do not want to see cuts in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other important programs. You know what's going on here in Washington? We're moving in exactly the opposite direction.
Bernie, you see, you're a communist. You can't help it because your parents inculcated you with that hateful philosophy in Brooklyn over the oil cloth and the seltzer. And consequently, you hate the rich. You also hate the middle class yourself. And your constituency are the deadbeats and the bums who collect the checks based upon those of us who work. But it gets even worse in clip 19.
Clearly, you have right-wing Republican extremists who are doing everything they can to protect millionaires and billionaires and say, let's do
that. All right, let's stop for a minute. Bernie, do you mean guys like Jeff Immelt? Do you mean that they're protecting Jeff Immelt, that they're protecting General Electric, Bernie? Because you should say that, because they're the ones who are supporting Obama. Obama is fundamentally in office because of the right-wing extremists who pay no taxes, according to what I've analyzed. This is unbelievable to me. Notice that this communist, a self-identified socialist, Bernie Sanders, calls any Republican who opposes the welfare state a right-wing Republican extremist, and MSNBC, run by that phony Brit, that show by that phony Brit, does not even identify him as the only member of Congress who's a socialist. To show you, just to show you how corrupt the government media complex is under this corrupt presidency. So what do you want to talk about? I'm not going to change your minds. Many of you are so brainwashed that you're going to vote Democrat anyway. I would say that if Joseph Stalin came back with an Americanized name and declared himself a Democrat, you'd vote for him. I declare that if Fidel Castro were to recover his health and move to America and change his name to Frank Castro, and he'd run as a Democrat from Oregon, you'd vote for him. Thou shalt not oppress thy neighbor nor rob him. The wages of a hired servant shalt not abide with thee all night until the morning. Thou shalt not curse the deaf nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but thou shalt fear thy God, I am the Lord. See, this is all in Leviticus, and it sounds good. I mean, the no stumbling block stuff and paying the guy who works for you, I like that. But if you actually read on in Leviticus, it's really frightening. You talk about fire and brimstone. You talk about killing and murder. It's all in here. I mean, this book is filled with murder. They kill everybody. They even kill people who divine. In other words, if you meet some... Look at this one. You shall not eat... you shall not practice divination nor soothsaying. And if a stranger... Which is this one here? And if you cut your hair off, also no good. You got a tattoo, no good. Where is this in Leviticus? Is it the page before it? It's really awful stuff. It's filled with a lot of nakedness, too. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter. Thou shalt not take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness. They are near kinswomen. It is a lewdness. And thou shalt not take a woman to her sister to be a rival to her to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. In other words, you can't marry the sister. And thou shalt not approach unto a woman to uncover her nakedness as long as she is impure by her uncleanness. And thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife to defile thyself with her. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination. And thou shalt not lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is perversion. Now, you've got to understand that. I mean, this is from 5,000 years ago. We know that this doesn't apply in San Francisco or in New York or in Austin, Texas. In fact, the opposite is true. If anyone would actually quote this, they would be called every name under the sun as they are today. So you've got to ask yourself, which part of the Bible do you accept and which part don't you accept? Where does modern religion begin and antiquated religion end? It's pretty heavy-duty stuff. And that's what makes people crazy, is that when they start reading this stuff, they don't know, well, wait a minute, how much of this should I believe? How much should I not believe? How much of this is the word of God? How much is it the word of man? How much is it the word of ancient Israelites who were low on vitamin B3 and were just suffering from sun blindness? You know, they don't know. I mean, you could say all of it's God's word, the Old Testament, the five books of Moses, so to speak. And then you could follow it fanatically and you wind up Mel Gibson. Or, you know, I'm saying, that, you know, so you don't know where to begin and end with it. But it's pretty heavy-duty stuff. So eventually, so you say, oh, I don't believe in any of it. So I strip it all away and I become a schmuck on television who's high all the time on marijuana, who then poses as a man who hates God and hates religion. That's the other side of the extreme. A man who thinks he's a wise guy because he hates God and he hates religion. He thinks that makes him sophisticated and cool. So I understand how hard it is to walk the walk in this earth, to not harm others or harm yourself and not be a drug addict. It's very difficult. And it's a very difficult thing for a person who is not overtly religious, by the way, because a religious person has the religion to the rules to follow, the roadmap. He has the geographic plan. The person who eschews religion, doesn't believe in God, and is still a good person, has possibly the hardest road because he doesn't even have a roadmap other than one guiding star. And that is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I've traveled, I mean, personally, we're getting into religion again. I didn't mean to go there, but I knew it would go there anyway. I've been around. I've traveled a lot. I've met a lot of people from all walks of life, different religions, races, as you have. We're living in that world today. It's nothing unique. And at the end of the day, all religions come down to one edict. One. Only one. I mean, if it's a decent religion, not a fanatical, insane religion, it all comes down to one set of rules. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you follow that, basically you're a good person. And if you follow the rituals of a religion and you don't follow that, then you're a piece of refuse. And I have met religious people with all the garb and with all the mumbo-jumbo, with the touching and the costumes, and they're the biggest crooks on the planet. I met them all. Okay, so don't tell me that just because you're religious, you're good, or because if you're not religious, you're bad. Let's grow up already. And now let's go back to how corrupt this administration is. The General Electric story I just told you about. It goes on and on and on. So which issue do you want to talk about? The corruption of General Electric? Owning NBC and MSNBC, which is nothing but a mouthpiece for his foul, evil policies. The fact that Jeff Immelt is an economic terrorist, moving an X-ray factory that had been in Wisconsin for 115 years, this pirate, because he's a CEO, gets to destroy an entire business and move it to China? Are you kidding me? If we had a legitimate government, they would prohibit that from happening. They would say to Jeff Immelt, you cannot decimate that factory in Wisconsin and move it to China. We're going to pass a law and prohibit it. And if you continue to do it, we're going to put you in prison. And they should do it to every other CEO who wants to take jobs and steal them out of America. Now you say, well, Michael, aren't you a free market capitalist? Don't you believe in the bottom line? Aren't they moving to China because it's more profitable? Well, I'm not an absolutist in anything. Not in religious belief, nor in economic beliefs. And I've told you this many times on the show. No, I'm not an absolutist with regard to this free market drivel, which is put forward mainly by the pirates in the Republican Party. And not all Republicans are pirates, but many of them are. And many of them represent only the pirates at the highest level of business. That's a fact of reality. But there's no difference between them and the Democrats with regard to represent the pirates of capitalism, the gangster capitalists who are now running this country. It doesn't matter who they pay off. They're gangsters, they're criminals, they're pirates. We know that. And a legitimate government is put in place to protect the people from piracy, from terrorists, from enemies domestic and enemies foreign. That's what the Constitution says. And to me, Jeffrey Immelt is a domestic enemy. If he is going to sack a business, then my definition of him as an economic terrorist is an apt description. And if we had a legitimate Congress, they would not permit him to move a factory that was 115 years, that has been there 115 years in Wisconsin, and move it to China. They'd say, no, you're not doing it. You can't do it. It just shows you how corrupt the government media complex is, that here's a guy who owns this corrupt, degenerate NBC, MSNBC outlets. He works for Obama as a jobs czar. I hate to use such a poor analogy, but the wolf guarding the chicken coop comes to mind. Here is a wolf who took the job as the jobs czar so he can move jobs over to China. And nobody says, wait a minute, you can't do that. Why? Where's our Congress? Why? Why not? Okay, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We got the shooter in Norway. We got the issue of Christianity. We got the General Electric's corruption. We got a lot of stories. We got the ATF, the head of the ATF, saying that Obama and Holder knew all about the guns going into Mexico, that although they were buffers, they're giving it up like the Valachi papers. I mean, this guy's like Joe Valachi of the government. If you think about it, it's like the revelations of the Valachi papers where he said, yeah, here's how the five families work, and they all had intermediaries or buffers, and no one could ever get to the top. Same exact thing. Only because this administration is so corrupt, and the shocks to our system are so incredible and so frequent, we don't even feel them anymore. We're like paralyzed frogs in a barrel. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm in for it good now. I got the, what is today? What day of the week? It's Wednesday, Economy and Money. And yet here we're doing the Friday show, Religion and Philosophy. All right, we're switching days around. There's another shocking story that I'm afraid to read to you. I don't know if you could take it. I really don't know how much more you can take of this corrupt administration, but here it comes. Today, Russia plans to sink the International Space Station in the year 2020. After Obama, the stealth foreign, we don't know who it represents, but we can only assume the worst. I mean, a rational man would say that if an enemy walks into your house and does things like this, a man comes into your house and does things like this, he turns out he's the enemy or working for the enemy. Could an enemy have done worse? Okay, he wrecks NASA. He demilitarizes the military as fast as he can. And now we read today, after NASA is over, Russia plans to sink the International Space Station in 2020 into the Pacific Ocean. And exactly in 2020, the Chinese will have a new space station floating around in space. So when they ask the Russian, how'd you come up with that date? They wouldn't answer. No one knew about this. They're going to take the International Space Station and take it down in pieces and sink it into the Pacific Ocean. Meanwhile, China's moving ahead with plans for a space station of its own. China's been working on a decade-long plan, beginning with the Tiangong 1 module that the country is going to launch this year, the very year Obama destroyed NASA. They're going to launch the first module, and that will culminate in a large Chinese space station around 2020. And during the projected 1 to 2 year lifetime of Tiangong 1, which means heavenly place in Chinese, an unpiloted Chinese Shenzhou 8 spacecraft will attempt to dock with the platform, followed later by 2 piloted Shenzhou missions to further hone rendezvous and docking skills. So in other words, the Russians are in cahoots with the Chinese, if you read between the line, to use the Chinese space station where eventually communism wins and we're destroyed. The only question I have, given that this is probably inevitable, given the corrupt administration, the corrupt leadership we have, and the complete lack of knowledge they have as to what's really going on in the chess game called national security, given that we have the stupidest people I've ever seen in the history of the world running this country, or the most corrupt, or the most treasonous, or a combination of all three, and that it's hopeless and that the communists will probably rule the world very soon from space without firing a single shot, the only question I have is what kind of Chinese food will they serve on this space station? Because, I mean, even if communism runs the world, assuming they'll cull a good portion of the human population, some of us will survive. And I assume some of you will still be here. If you remain apolitical, they won't kill you exactly or harvest you with Soylent Green as fertilizer. And therefore, I want to know what kind of Chinese food they will be serving in space. Will it be Szechuan food? Will it be old-style Cantonese food? Will it be Shanghainese food? I personally would vote for a Hakka cuisine in space, but I doubt very much that my favorite variety of Chinese food will be served up there for one simple reason, which is the clay pots are too heavy to travel into space. So I suspect that they were not going to get any clay pot cookery in the Chinese space station for all of you future communists who are going to go up there. It'll probably be old, greasy Szechuan, the kind of garbage you grew up with in Queens and Brooklyn. 1-800-449-82. Can't have fun. Not on my show. I already got they're angry at me over one word I said. One word already. They're mad already. They're calling with rage. They're enraged at me. All right, here we go. Wisconsin. Guy, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, the Norwegian terrorist, it just happens to be a Christian. He is not a Christian terrorist. He has no organization. He has no supporters in any Orthodox church.
Yeah, well, I said that. I said he's a terrorist who is a Christian. Then we agree. I didn't say he was acting in the name of the Christian church.
Well, there's a difference between a Christian terrorist and somebody who just happens to be a Christian.
All right, so I should redefine him as a terrorist who's a Christian.
Yeah, like the D.C. sniper. He just happened to be a Muslim. He didn't have any organization. He just...
I agree with you. Okay, that's a very good revision then. He was not a Christian terrorist. He was a terrorist who was a Christian. Very good. Wisconsin, Anderson, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, I mean, George Orwell couldn't have written this better with General Electric. You know, it's the official industrial propaganda complex.
Yes, that's right. The NBC and MSNBC work for the administration. They are an arm of the administration. They are the propaganda ministry of the administration. The degenerates and other microcephalics who broadcast on those networks are simply mouthpieces for the administration. And whatever Jeff Immelt once said or what Obama once said, they say. There is absolutely no independence whatsoever.
I mean, imagine Murdoch in the Bush administration, you know?
Could you imagine? Yeah, you raise a good point. Would you imagine what the uproar would be if the successful businessman Rupert Murdoch had been hired by George Bush as his job czar, and then it turns out he's moving Fox News to Beijing? What do you think would happen then?
Yeah,
we know what would happen then. All of the communist yackers wouldn't be able to shut their traps. That's what would happen. 1-800-449-8255. Boy, the hour is flying by, really flying by. There's a lot of stuff out there happening. I mean, so corrupt, it's incomprehensible. New York on WOR. Bill, go ahead, please.
Michael, I heard your comments regarding your citations, rather, from the Bible. Thou shalt not, and thou shalt not this and that, citing Leviticus particularly. I just wanted to say that when you stated that some of it might be from men, or some of it might be from Israelites who are low on vitamins, it's extremely offensive. We have to know and remember that all the words from the Bible come directly from God's mouth to Moses, to Israel.
Hold it, my friend. You can believe that if you wish, but do you actually follow every edict in Leviticus yourself?
I certainly fall, but I try my hardest to be the best I can.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but my friend, I assume you're an Orthodox Jewish man. Is that correct?
Yes. Modern.
Okay. Modern. So Leviticus is filled with murder. That if you do something this, that you're supposed to be stoned to death. You don't practice that, do you?
No, here's the whole point. Guess what? If this guy who killed the little...
Well, no, wait a minute. No, tell me, the Orthodox Jews who believe every word of this is God's word, they don't stone homosexuals to death, do they?
In the time of the temple, we certainly will, and did. In the time of the temple, when we were following all the laws, because we had our temple, we were...
You mean, but you plan on doing that again?
Absolutely. Anyone?
Oh, great. This is terrific. Oh, God, did I uncover a rock?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. You know, ever since October 1917, when the Russian Revolution occurred, the Red Revolution, fostered by the psychotic, based upon the works of Marx and Lenin and the other characters, Trotsky, the world has never been the same. And the world has been in a constant battle between two economic systems, primarily one of free enterprise and one of state-run economic system, meaning communism. Right now in America, that battle, that epic battle, that epic struggle between a state-run economy, meaning communism, which is what Obama wants, the Democrats want, and a relatively free market, which is what the Republicans are arguing for, and I say relatively because they're about 80% along in the socialist mold, that's the battle you're watching. So when you hear the clock is ticking, there's going to be a default on debt. What you have to understand here is this is an epic battle, and Obama is a Marxist. He has been since he's a young man. I've proven it in trickle-up poverty. Whether you read it or not is irrelevant to me because the proof is there, and the proof is in his own background and his own associations and his own policies if you actually pay enough attention to him. He is a Marxist. He is a Marxist, but he's a strange Marxist. He's a pragmatic Marxist who knows that he has to work with arch-capitalists like Jeff Immelt in order to get his ultimate agenda across. And so while Immelt could care less about what he does to the military, what he does to the social order of this country, what he does to the borders, language, or culture, as long as GE's profits continue to soar, Obama continues to keep his eye on the prize, which is worldwide communism. So he destroys NASA, No one says a word. He deballs the military, and the stooges in the military don't say a word because they're yes men. Not a word in the media. We read that General Electric is shipping a 115-year-old X-ray factory from Wisconsin to Beijing, China, and investing $2 billion over there. And no one says he should be fired from his job as the job czar. Again, we are living in very desperate and very bad times, and Obama continues to insult this country with one insult after another. But there are so many of them coming at us so frequently, we don't know how to react to it. The gun scandal alone would bring down any other president. And that is the gun-running scandal called Fast and Furious, where the head of the ATF today testified that the president and Eric Holder knew about it, that it went all the way to the top, all the way to the top. This is the equivalent of the Valachi papers, where Joseph Valachi, a high-ranking soldier in one of the New York mafia families, remember when he testified back in the 60s, what a shock it was, when he explained before Congress how it all worked with the buffers, and then it was turned into a, in The Godfather, they reenacted it, where that guy acts out the Valachi character with the buffers, remember that? Well, we have the same thing here. We have the buffers. Now they're talking. The buffers are getting up before Congress, and they're blowing the whistle on the Godfathers. And you don't know anything about it, because the Godfather, in this case, owns the press. The Godfather owns NBC. The Godfather works with NBC. The Godfather directs the marionette perverts on MSNBC to say what he wants to say. And so he says, oh, those evil right-wing Republicans, how dare they want America to have a free market system? How dare they be so un-American as to be American? How dare they be so un-American as to profess American values? Why, the real Americans want ex-Soviet values. They want a top-heavy Soviet state with unlimited welfare and unlimited Medicare. That's the real American who doesn't want America anymore. And you don't even understand what's going on, many of you. I am Michael Savage. I'm giving you one man's opinion. This default thing is nonsense, because if you want my opinion, I would say default. Who's going to really be hurt by the defaulting? Companies like General Electric would be hurt by the default, by the way, not us. Do you realize that if you look back on the history of loans from the IMF and defaults, you look back to the 60s. I've been around. I've seen it all happen. Remember when South American countries used to default on debt? And we would rewrite the loan. It's like you. Like if you get into trouble and you go to a bank and you say, I can't pay my bills. In the old days of 20 years ago, in many cases, the banks would restructure your loan, which means they would forgive a certain percentage of it and let you keep your house and your car and some basics so that you could climb back out of debt. But they certainly didn't put you in the poorhouse because they knew they would lose a customer. What do you think China would do if we defaulted on our debt? What do I care if our bond ratings go down? What does that matter to me? Does that affect you? How does it affect you? You're earning zero interest on your investment anyway. So therefore, who's going to be hurt by a default? Nobody but China and a few American zillionaires who are benefiting from this artificial economy that's being controlled by them anyway. At least that's one man's opinion. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Alabama. Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
A progressive from Alabama, and I just wanted to, and this might be to your surprise, but I wanted to let you know that I and several of the liberal friends that I have really have just think that you have shined bright in this commentary and reporting on the tragedy in Norway. And of course, that's not the first time I've listened to you. Even as a progressive, I really admire that your website is one of the ones that I check on a daily basis, along with a couple of the progressive friends I have, because you're not afraid. It's so refreshing that.
Jason, I don't know. Look, Jason, here's the thing. Your compliment could actually be a curse for me, but it's okay. I'm a free thinker, and I was hoping that at least one progressive who listens to the show would understand that I don't come into any subject with a preordained idea of what I should say. Unfortunately, many people in this business stick to the doxy of the Republican Party to the extent that I can't listen to them. But it's true for your side as well. I mean, you listen to MSNBC, they never vary from the doxies of the left. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You can imagine that being in Alabama as a progressive, I'm in a minority.
What do you mean by progressive? I mean, what does the word mean? You're a communist, right?
No, absolutely not. I actually believe in true democracy. You use a term that I wish MSNBC would use when you talk about an artificial economy. When you the understanding that the people...
Yeah, absolutely. But why then buy into their rhetoric of calling yourself a progressive? What does that really mean? Where's the progress you want to take us to? Their progress means leading us into Marxism. That's their idea of progress.
Well, they just like Boehner has taken the Republican argument and has taken over ownership of it, they've taken over that. A true liberal...
Wait a minute. Boehner is as moderate as they get? What are you talking about? They're trying to paint him into Adolf Hitler. Boehner is a moderate Republican. He's by no means a right-winger. What is the man calling for? But he's saying stop spending and don't tax people anymore. They don't want to pay anymore. That's what the entire election was about last. You say you want democracy, right? There was an election last October. Remember what happened in November, rather? 70 Democrats got thrown out because the people said they don't want any more of this progressive socialism. But anyway, I appreciate your commentary, and I'm glad at least you listen. I would assume you're in what, your 30s?
No, I'm just turned 40. And
all right. Well, you at least you're able to think outside the doxy of the progressive movement, and I appreciate that. And now I want to tell you about a very important advertiser of mine, Envoy Medical. They're really a great company. I met the president, and the reason I want to tell you about them is because many of you are aging, and as you age, you focus more on the legacy that you leave your children and your grandchildren, right? And sharing your wisdom and experience with your kids and your grandkids is one of life's most important callings. But look, what happens if you suffer from hearing loss? This gift could be lost. Leaving that legacy of yours requires effective two-way communication, talking and hearing, right? Now, there's a new medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. This is a revolutionary solution. It's 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. You want to learn about this breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for a lifetime? Then call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. It's simple. That's 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today. Call 1-800-953-5453 or go to envoymedical.com for a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem. Visit envoymedical.com.
Savage.
It is the one and only independently minded talk show host in the history of the world, Michael Savage, Freethinker. Freethinker, one who forms opinions on the basis of reason, independently of authority, especially one who doubts or denies religious dogma. Now, many of you are going to hear part of that sentence, not the whole sentence. One who doubts or denies religious dogma. I didn't say religion. You can be religious. You can be a religious person without being dogmatic. And you could form opinions using reason. But the problem is we don't live in an age of reason anymore. We have devolved for a number of reasons, and I could go through the long litany of the educational system breaking down, the illiteracy of our music as an example, where hieroglyphics were far more advanced than rap music, for example. You have illiterate sports stars who were held up as role models. You have degenerate junkie girls in Hollywood who every other day they're in a rehab, and that's held up as a role model. You have the lowest of the low specimens of humanity, the real housewives of this. They're not the real housewives. They're the real dirtbags of. What real housewife would cavort around looking like a prostitute and think that they're cool, but somebody deranged? So there's many different reasons that we're living in a debased time where reason doesn't thrive. There's no reason in our society. It's an unreasonable society. They don't even know what reason means. You know, the word reason is based upon an actual theory of how to use your mind to arrive at correct decisions or conclusions. You're lucky with me because I'm a highly trained individual in reasoning, particularly in the Aristotelian logic that I was trained in. And I'm a highly educated man with many higher degrees, which you have to know about. I keep not talking about it because many of you are offended if I mention it, but why should I hide it? In a media, especially on the conservative side, where people basically have high school degrees and are faking the fact that they know what they're talking about, doesn't mean they're stupid. You can be very smart with a high school degree, But it doesn't mean that you're very educated or that you have a wide knowledge, a wide enough knowledge base for a talk show. And that's why they don't sound like they know what they're talking about on many issues. And that's why they stick beating the drum, Republican good, Democrat bad. Republican good, Democrat bad. Republican good, Democrat bad. And the same thing on the left. They may have gone to college, but they're dumb. And they don't even understand what reason is. I'm very lucky because I actually studied classical Aristotelian logic and scientific method. I'll never forget it. I got to tell you this story. I told it once before in 16 years. Then we'll get back to the news, okay? Just so you understand my bona fides. I graduated with a degree from Queens College of the City University of New York in biology and education. I think it was also a little minor in sociology. And I was going to be a teacher. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I was never a good student. I didn't like memorizing. And I had no real definitive goals other than I kind of liked animals. And I really didn't want to rob anything from anybody. So that ruled out most professions in America. I mean, if you like animals and you don't want to rob from anybody, you can't become virtually anything in America. So, okay. And I was like a kid, didn't know what I wanted to do. At one point, so I leave America and I go to Europe for I don't know how many months, whatever it was. And I come back and I was like still unfocused. So I enrolled in summer courses at the City University of New York when it was still a great university with incredible minds. I didn't care about their politics and the sciences. It was rife with communists. I didn't know it at the time, but there were brilliant men in the mathematics and in the sciences, men and women. Many Europeans. And I took a course in logic and scientific method, and I had to study it, listen to me carefully, not in words, but in mathematical symbols. The professor made us read Plato's Republic in mathematical symbols. Now you say, well, what does that have to do with politics today, Michael? Because by using mathematical symbols to get to a truth, a mathematical truth, and then going back to using words, you find out that there's a way to reason, deductive logic, inductive reasoning. But the children for the last 20-some-odd years haven't been taught how to reason, have they? They've been taught how to follow groupthink. Teacher says this is a certain kind of phobic thing to do. You must believe in global warming or you don't like the earth and you don't like animals and you're a bad child. And so you have children who actually are brainwashed like little socialist Nazis, into believing things that are patently false. And that's why it's so hard to be a reasonable person in this world. And I know many of you agree with me. Many of you have tried to reason with neighbors and friends or with colleagues, and you don't get anywhere. It's because they're not capable of reason. Don't you understand that? And, okay, so you want them to get Christian about it, say, well, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. It's actually true. You should forgive an unreasonable person, but just walk away from them and don't talk to them. You're never going to win an argument with a person who cannot reason, which is why the dumbos who are Democrats are impossible to reason with. If you say to Obama, the communist, wait a minute, all the people on the right are saying, or the Tea Party, or the middle class, however you want to define it, are saying is the country can't afford this drunken spending, stop the spending, and don't tax the middle class anymore because they don't want to pay it. And they don't want to support the 50% of people or so who don't work anymore. The benefits are too rich as it is right now. They have unlimited medical care. Of course they're going to use the medical system as much as they can. So rein in the Medicare. Raise the retirement age for a couple of years. And he says, no, we're not touching entitlements, and we're going to tax the middle class. When they say rich, they mean the middle class. Each teacher who makes 100 grand a year is rich now, according to Obama. I told you that. Any teacher who's been working more than 15 years is making over $100,000 a year with benefits. So you're rich now. Two of you are rich. You're now a member of the bourgeoisie that you always hated. So when you hear these people saying tax the rich, they're talking about taxing the middle class, not the rich, because General Electric, who is basically a wholly owned subsidiary of, or I think the government is a wholly owned subsidiary of General Electric, I can't be sure, probably that way, pays no taxes at all. So when the demagogues like Obama say, I want to do what's fair, and I want to make sure that corporations pay their fair share, but he's really talking about Jeff Immelt and GE, isn't he? GE earned $5.3 billion, if I remember correctly, on U.S. profits last year and paid no taxes because they shifted it to foreign income. And they got away with it. Why? Because they run the government. Now you got a guy, Jeff Immelt, who's now the job czar for Obama, president of GE, and announces yesterday he's moving a 115-year-old X-ray technology factory from Wisconsin to Beijing, China, and GE is going to invest $2 billion in China to teach the Chinese how to be better engineers. He's the job czar? That's an act to me of economic terrorism. It's economic terrorism, says Michael Savage, free thinker, someone who forms opinions on the basis of reason. Reason, independently of authority. Especially one who doubts or denies religious dogma. But you can add one who doubts or denies state dogma. Same exact thing. So which do you choose, state dogma or religious dogma? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's still dogmatic. I choose the middle road because I live in the middle kingdom. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's move on. Dot me when I return. We'll open it up to any subject that intrigues you. Religion, politics, science, poetry, art, even Chinese food in space. Will it be Hakka or Cantonese on the space station?
Savage.
Is Norway suspected murderer Breivik a Christian terrorist? Some would argue yes. I would include myself in that argument. And not to slam Christianity, but as a warning to those of you who think that it can't happen within your own ranks. It can and it did. It can and it did, and it will happen again. Now listen to this.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Now, I am a Goldwater conservative. I believe those are the truest words ever spoken in my lifetime, next to Eisenhower's Beware the Military-Industrial Complex. However, it doesn't mean that you have to go out and start slaughtering innocent people if you believe that extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice. It doesn't mean you go out and blow things up and blow up parliament buildings. It doesn't mean you go out and kill children. And what I'm trying to have you understand is you can be an extremist without being a murderer. You can be an extremist without being a terrorist. In fact, I want to educate you that you absolutely can be an extremist and not be a terrorist. You absolutely can be an extremist in what you do and work around the clock to save this nation without having to resort to what this lunatic did in Norway. That is the whole point of my show, which is not to now withdraw from the battle against multiculturalism, not to withdraw in your battle against socialism, not to withdraw in your battle against cultural and economic Marxism, but in fact to redouble on your efforts and fight them with everything in you without resorting to terrorism. Do not resort to terrorism. Do not become a murderer, but be an extremist. I'm trying to tell you, you can be an extremist without being a terrorist.
Savage.
Like Obama. Obama, as I pointed out yesterday, is clearly an extremist, but not a terrorist. Although some would argue that with his war in Libya, he is a terrorist, but that's a separate discussion. He's clearly an extremist. He won't yield to the American people. And when I say the American people, I mean the people who actually earn the money and pay the taxes. I don't mean the American people who are deadbeats and collect checks from the government who don't work. As far as I'm concerned, their opinion doesn't matter. Of course they're going to always vote a raise for themselves. It's the way the world is. People everywhere want something for nothing. But those of us who are paying over 50% of our income with federal, state, and local taxes are fed up. We don't want to pay anymore. And that's where the Tea Party came in. That's where the 70 people who got thrown out of office, or the Democrats got fired last November. But the media won't let you remember that. Remember, we had an election after Obama was elected. Remember it? I remember very well because I published Trickle Up Poverty, and it was time to come out at the time of the election. It probably shaped the election to some extent. It sold very well. I mean, it sold almost 200,000-300,000 in hardcover. I realize it's not as good as Harry Potter, but that's a lot of books when you consider a few more than one person reads a book at a time. That's awful. That's an awfully big number. 200,000-300,000 in hardcover. I mean, you take a look at Nancy Pelosi wrote a book that sold 4,000 copies. The politicians on the left publish books. They get $3-4 million advances and no one buys them. Play Yellow Submarine for me right now as I take a breather on the Savage Nation. Because I think
we all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine.
This is from the 60s. Everything was slower.
Yellow submarine.
Where's the lyrics already?
Yellow submarine.
And our friends. Ugh, what a buildup. It's like listening to watching glue dry.
Many more of them.
Is there a lyric?
Live next door. And the band begins to play.
That's where you should have started at, Schmendrick.
We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. Yellow submarine.
We if I don't hear a lyric in 10 seconds, I'm cutting this
yellow
tune.
Submarine.
That's the end of it. Terrible. What? Oh, I'm not hearing it? Oh, how come I didn't hear? Oh, I don't get stereo. Okay, fine. You got the picture. We all live in a yellow submarine. Remember the guy with the horn in the Yellow Submarine cartoon where he was eating himself? He devoured everything in the valley, and eventually the horn went, so he sucked everything in like an anteater. He was so greedy, and then the horn sucked himself into the horn. That's Jeffrey M. Elton, G.E. That's the greedy pigs who are sucking the country dry and killing us. Those are the people that Obama castigates when, in fact, they're the people who put him in power. It's unbelievable to me. But the American people will never know. As I said to you many times, no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. That was written in the 1920s by a satirist of his time. No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. Okay? It's that simple. And so, therefore, they can get away with anything. They can get away with war and call it peace. They get away with raping the economy and call it progressivism. They get away with having billionaires put them in office and then say, we're going to attack the billionaires, and you don't know the difference. That's why I say we all live in a yellow submarine. Russia now announces it's going to destroy the International Space Station and bring it down and sink it in the Pacific Ocean in the year 2020. So we'll have nowhere to go because the Chinese are going to have one by 2020. And, of course, that concludes Obama's mission, which is to make certain that worldwide communism wins. And as I said to you, many of us will be killed when worldwide communism rules. They will do what they did every time they've ruled. They've had mass purges, mass executions. They will cull probably 20% of the population. No doubt MSNBC will cheer it on, saying the counter-revolutionaries must go. And after the purge is over, I suppose some of you will still be living. And then the only question is, what kind of Chinese food will they be serving in space? Because I think that they will probably have vacation flights to the International Space Station that the Chinese put up there. They probably won't be able to perform, have a clay oven in the, but they can have. I mean, they could do a wok. I would think that they could certainly do wok cookery in space using some kind of, laser beam? Could they harness some of the energy from space and turn it into some kind of like the equivalent of gas? I can't cook on electric myself. The heat source is very important. I cannot cook on an electric burner the way my mother did. I don't know how she did it. I like gas. Maybe I get some fumes or something. It gets me a little stoked up. But there's something magical about gas cooking. They cannot cook on a space station with gas. I'm sure the Chinese can't use charcoal in space. They won't be able to do that. They're going to have to use some kind of some super futuristic energy source to make their cookery up there. But we'll have to wait and see. I don't know if I'll still be here. What year is this? I don't even know the year anymore. I've worked so hard for so many years, I forgot the year, which is my secret to success, by the way, is to forget the time. The time is 41 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Savage Nation. It's July 27th, 2011. So if the Chinese are going to have a space station in 2020, that's 9 years from now. Maybe I will be here. Maybe I will be here. But then by then, I may have been purged by the Obama administration. Because if he wins again in 2012, I think he'll be president for life like Idi Amin. And I think the administration, there'll be no two-party system. You've got them saying now he ought to do it on his own. You got the communists, the naked communists, getting their dander up to actually expose themselves, saying he ought to just raise the debt limit. He doesn't need Congress. He really ought to act alone. Of course, that's an authoritarian dictatorship. But if you say that to them, they'll say, no, it isn't. You got to get those right-wingers out of the way. It's just acting in the interest of the people. The way who did? Let's see, Mao Zedong, 30 million Chinese killed by Mao Zedong, the dictator. Joseph Stalin, 30 million killed, did it on his own. Adolf Hitler acted on his own. No Reichstag needed. I mean, they were there like the stooges in Congress. Might be after Obama wins again. There'll be a fake Congress as there is in Chavez's Venezuela. Right? Argentina, sorry. I always mix the two countries up. A is on the top and V is on the bottom. I don't know why I mix up Argentina and Venezuela. He is in Venezuela, isn't he? Yeah. But wherever he is, he's a dictator and there's a fake Congress. So that's the model that MSNBC wants. Do it on your own, President Obama. Override that nasty Congress. We don't need checks and balances. We just need checks. We don't need balances. In fact, we don't want balances. We only want checks. We want those 80 million checks to go out from Timothy Geithner, who I'm convinced by his actions may have converted to Islam, as I said earlier in the show. And I realize that that's quite shocking to make a statement like that. But I thought about it last night and woke up in a sweat when I said to myself, is Timothy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, a secret Muslim? Now, the reason I ask this question is because, according to Sharia finance laws, it is illegal and immoral and possibly even fattening to charge usury or any interest on loans. Muslims do not believe in charging interest on loan money. And since Timothy Geithner refuses to permit any interest to be granted for anyone who invests in U.S. banks, interest rates are near zero for the first time in American history. So we can only assume that Timothy Geithner is practicing Sharia finance law by not charging any interest, and therefore we legitimately ask, is he secretly a Muslim? Now, of course, you have to have an education to get the joke, but many of you are literalists, and you don't get the joke, and you think I'm deadly serious. That's the problem. There's scarce humor and scant humor. And there's an awful lot of scat humor as well, but I don't engage in it. New York City, WOR. Betty, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that you were saying who is going to benefit from raising the debt ceiling? The same people that pulled the wool over our eyes back in 2008 that said the world was going to fall apart if we didn't give out $700 billion or trillion dollars. It's all the
That's
people
right.
on Wall Street. All the people on Wall Street all over the world investing.
And don't forget the construction projects that are going on around America are benefiting very few people. These large construction, these make-work projects are benefiting people to the trillions. But let me ask you something. Do you agree with me that defaulting on the debt would not be catastrophic to the American people? It would be catastrophic for who? The Chinese and who? Some American corporations who hold the bonds.
Money is fiction at this point. I mean, what is money? Our dollar, what is it based on? It's based on nothing. I don't know.
I'm telling you, I would say default on the debt. I think we should copy Argentina and Venezuela from the 60s. What's the difference? I mean, they did it. They're doing better than we are. The only people who get screwed would be the Chinese. They're the ones who screwed us anyway with artificial control of the currency. And would not permit, because they own the Congress, they didn't impose tariffs. I would have imposed a 20% tariff on Chinese goods 3 years ago when I saw what they were doing to us. So since they rigged the game by buying the politicians who should have imposed tariffs on them, I would say take it back by defaulting on the debt. What's the difference? Okay, Oklahoma, quickly, Bud, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just had to call and comment on your clarity of thought. It is always amazing. I find myself many times wanting to disagree with you, but I find if I have an open mind and listen to what you're saying, I cannot disagree with you. It just amazes me at how clear your thought process is.
That's an interesting statement, and I try to keep my mind uncluttered, to be honest with you, by functioning alone. I function primarily alone. I don't have... you know, a lot of people in this business travel around with 9-10 people in their entourage, mainly the guy with the blackboards who lost his job at Fox. He needed them to support him. But I find it's better to be alone and to be, you know, have your own thoughts at a certain point in your life. It doesn't mean I don't, you know, interact with family from time to time or whatever. But frankly, I like an uncluttered view of the world. I like to just look at the clear skies of the West. I like to look at the clear waters. I like to look at the birds and the animals. And I get clarity of thought. By looking at nature, I learn a lot from nature. There's nothing more clear to me than nature. And you can learn a lot by being a naturalist, which I've been since I'm a young child, incidentally. And I would say that in addition to my rigorous education, my training in Aristotelian logic, etc., my observations of nature help me sharpen my views and see what's really going on.
Well, to me, another thing that's amazing is that you have no fear of what people are going to think about what you say.
It's not that I have fear, I have concern. I knew that there's a group called the P1s, that's your largest audience type. Many of my audience are Christian, really devout Christians, and they loved me. But after the last few days, they're doubting me because they think I was attacking Christianity because they're stuck in their doxies. And it's the same thing with the Jewish people. When I say anything about the Bible that I feel is troublesome to me, they suddenly think that I'm not a good person to listen to. And I know it may affect my audience numbers, but that's not what I have to get up here for. I have to seek the truth. If I can't seek the truth, then there's no point in my doing the show anymore. Because at this stage of my life, it's all about working for the truth and nothing but the truth. The whole truth, ma'am, so help me God. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So look, before I close out this hour, you know, I've quoted a lot from the Old Testament, and a lot of you are, most of you are Christians who read the New Testament. There was a time in America that when you went to a hotel room, every hotel room in America had a Bible placed by the Gideons. And now, of course, they have channel guides to the pay-per-view pornography instead because it's a better profit center. And so the traveling husband who's on the road, who in the past would have picked up a Gideon Bible in the middle of the night when he was lonely, would see Psalms, a comfort in time of loneliness, Psalm 23, Isaiah 41, 10, Hebrews 13, 5. And he would say, all right, let me read that. Or let's say someone who's traveling to a funeral would turn to the Bible and pick it up, and you would see comfort in time of sorrow, 2 Corinthians 1 or Romans 8. Or you're suffering through a disease. You'd be in a hotel on the way to a clinic, perhaps. You'd pick up a Bible, relief in times of suffering. Guidance in time of decision, protection in time of danger, courage in time of fear, Hebrews 13:5, Ephesians 6:10, peace in time of turmoil, Isaiah, rest in time of weariness, Matthew or Psalm 23, strength in time of temptation, James 1 Corinthians, and it's not there anymore. Even the Marriott hotel chain, owned by a religious family initially, found out that a profit center is better than a God center in the hotel room. So they have burned the Bibles, taken them out of the hotels, and they put in pornography in every hotel in America. Consequently, the men who are on the road, and now even the women on the road, are watching vile, disgusting, sick pornography in their hotel rooms. They are not restoring their spirit in any way. They are depleting their spirit even further. And they come home both physically, emotionally, and spiritually completely devoid of any strength whatsoever. And that is, in my mind, of paramount importance in this country at this time. There is nothing that's replenishing the soul. Let's look at another area. The word restaurant itself, we all go to restaurants from time to time, some low-end, middle-end, high-end. The word restaurant itself comes from the root word to restore. In times past, one went to a restaurant to restore themselves. It was sort of a meal in a spa setting. It was, I don't mean with bathing. You went there to restore, to gather, to get strength so you didn't have to bother shopping, cleaning, and cooking. Now you go in a restaurant, particularly in the big cities, and what do you hear? Screaming and yelling and begging for a meal and make it this way and give me a glass of wine. And the tension, you walk out. Do you walk out rested from a restaurant today? No, you don't. You walk out feeling sicker than when you went in. And you had a meal that had a this in, and they drizzled strawberries on top of a veal chop, and you almost puked your guts up because you read it was good, and from some schmuck from San Francisco drizzled strawberry juice on a pork chop on television, you think you ate a great meal. But you didn't. You ate garbage. Nobody would put raspberry juice on a piece of meat except the moron from San Francisco who went to a cooking school because he couldn't get into a college. But then again, the people don't know what they're eating anyway. Years ago, I remember I met a man who owned a famous restaurant in Manhattan. I'm talking in the late 1960s. One of the most famous, cool restaurants in the city at the time. I don't even remember the name of it. And I said to him, how's the food? I was a pretty young guy at the time. He said, the food's not important, Michael. I said, what do you mean? He says, let me explain. The most important thing in a restaurant, from a business point of view, is the decor to get people in. The second most important thing in a restaurant is the service to get them back. And the least important thing in a restaurant is the food, because most people don't care, nor do they know what they're eating. Boy, was he ever right. And that's why I tend to go to holes in the wall or dumps, or cheap Chinese restaurants, or Japanese restaurants, or things of that nature. I don't like fancy restaurants, nor do I like fancy rhetoric. To me, clear and simple, basic. Whatever it is, that's what I like. And I hope I try to deliver. I mean, I try to deliver the same thing every day on the Savage Nation. When you come to this show, I hope you leave it somewhat restored. I hope that my clarity of thinking and my ability to take a subject and to dissect it for you and let you then come to your own conclusions restores you in some way. That's my hope. That's my goal. That's my end. Go to michaelsavage.com to see all the stories I've talked about thus far and what I will be talking about in the hour to follow.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here is the news from MichaelSavage.com. To me, the most important story is this. Obama's job czar, who is supposed to create jobs, is destroying jobs. Can you believe the conflict of interest that this corrupt administration is engaged in? He picks a job czar who is the CEO of General Electric. And the first thing General Electric is doing, that is Immelt, is moving the GE X-ray business from Wisconsin to China, where he will invest $2 billion in developing new facilities in China. I mean, this is impeachable. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Is the default deadline truly August 2nd? Well, analysts say no, of course not. It's all hogwash. The ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Manager, shared the Fast and Furious, that's the gun running story, info with the White House, he says. Obama has said neither he nor Holder authorized or knew about the operation. Oh, no, he had buttons. He had buffers. Yeah, Obama and Holder had buffers. They didn't know anything about the weapons going into the hands of suspected drug traffickers from Mexican drug cartels. Well, the head of ATF says the opposite. He says they did know. Wow. The Christian terrorist, the greatest enemy is the enemy within. It's on MichaelSavage.com. Other stories include George Soros is returning the money of his investors because he has to report who they are, according to new regulations. Gee, I wonder who they are. Well, we'll never know. Counter-terror pick accused of misleading Congress. So Obama's picked a lawyer to be the head of our counterterrorism branch. Isn't that great? The last head of the counterterrorism branch was a former Navy pilot. This one is a lawyer. Big difference in philosophy, I suppose. Mr. Wu is going to resign amid sexual encounter allegations. We have a very friendly picture of Congressman Wu, the Democrat from Oregon, in a tiger costume. That says it all. Arab Spring dreams dying amid violence. I'm not shocked, are you? Police unarmed in liberal Norway. I'm not shocked, are you? California Governor Jerry Brown nominates failed Obama pick. The radical extreme left is Goodwin Liu. California State Supreme Court, just what we needed. Well, what else is on MichaelSavage.com? Have you listened to the Savage audio, Beware the Government Media Complex? Or the audio Savage on Obama and Space? It's all there for free. How about the chimp they try to turn into a human from the London Daily Mail? Palestinians say they use archaeology to rewrite history. No kidding. What else do they do to rewrite? The Lockerbie bomber who was supposed to die, that's why the British released him. We knew it was a lie. You know they lie. He just appeared at a pro-Gaddafi rally. The Gabby May Doom Zone case. That's the DSK case. Wow, what up, dog? Also, Abuse of Power, Savage to make his fiction debut. A thriller sure to score a bullseye with its target audience, Abuse of Power, coming in September. It's right now available on Amazon. Check it all out on MichaelSavage.com. I'm not biblical yet. I almost changed my name to Micah Savage. That would be good, Beowulf. What if I changed it to Micah Savage? Oh, God. This is going to break your heart. Russia announces that the International Space Station, which billions of U.S. tax dollars helped build and maintain some 200 miles above the Earth, would be deorbited and sunk into the Pacific in the year 2020.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. That's terrible, right?
Yet another part of the space program Obama's destroying.
Unbelievable. It's beyond belief. Poll says Romney is leading a declared GOP candidate, whoever it might be. Atheist group files suit against cross at 9/11 site. They're not an atheist group. They're a communist group, okay? Prayer ban at National Cemetery sparks outrage. Prayer ban at a national cemetery. The poor soldiers who died to save America. The poor soldiers who died believing in their God and believing in Jesus. Can you imagine the vermin, what they're doing to them? Well, okay, we'll keep going on MichaelSavage.com. What else is in the news? Let's see. Not a lot. Same thing. The atheists are trying to destroy America's culture, whatever's left of it. The leftists are trying to destroy America's economy, whatever's left of it. What else? Without a plan in Washington, D.C. Reid vows to kill House GOP debt plan. Palin to keynote Labor Day Tea Party rally in Iowa. I think a Tea Party ought to have a cup of coffee. Get a little more activist. Don't you? Massive heat wave claims 64 lives in the United States. Long-term universal flu shot on horizon. Michelle Obama says that there should be apple slices in every Happy Meal in McDonald's. Woo. Mm-hmm. What else? What else is in the news? Huffington Post stock hits all-time low. It's about as low as Arianna Huffington's soul. It's as low as it'll go. What else? Mubarak refuses food. Let's see. Goldfish survive 134 days without food. Put that on your Twitter. Exploding toilet injures Air Force man during military exercise. I guess it was one of those golden toilet seats that Barbara Boxer talked about. TSA refuses to hire a man born with one hand because he wouldn't be able to perform pat-downs. Family shot while feeding homeless. Oh, God. Here's a new report, a shocker. Russia tied to blast at U.S. Embassy. Oh, God, this is horrible. This is just getting worse by the second with Russia. And 46% of Americans think that most people in Congress are corrupt. Only 46%? What's wrong with the rest of the 54? What, are they asleep? What else is in the news? You'll hear all of it and more right here on the one and only Savage Nation. Stay tuned.
Savage.
The reason the rich support Obama is because they think that they can control him and bring about a shrinking of the middle class and a new Soviet America where there will be the ruling class and the peasants, of which they will be the ruling class, and he will be continue to be their friend, colleague, and puppet. What they don't understand is that Obama's smarter than they are, much like a certain Austrian was originally used by the Krupp Steel Corporation and other large manufacturers in Germany who thought that they could manipulate this charismatic young man who was running around Germany raising so much interest in politics. And they thought that they could put him in power, this young man from Austria, and eventually manipulate him. Little did they know that he was using them. They weren't using him. I have studied Hitler's rise from the time he was a mere corporal in World War One, and somewhat of a war hero, by the way, and how, when the National Socialists first emerged on the scene in Germany, which, remember, was a democracy during the Weimar Republic, how he was in bed with all the industrialists. The rich of the country loved him. The rich liked what they were hearing. The rich loved it. You didn't know that Hitler was a back-to-nature man, did you? Many of you don't even know. You're so ignorant of history. I can't blame you. I blame the education system. He was a vegetarian. He didn't drink. He was a back-to-nature movement guy. But more than that, he was anti-capitalist, so they thought. The socialists who were aligned with Hitler, the National Socialists, were against private property and ownership. But Hitler didn't go for that right away. As a matter of fact, it led to a big fight within the Nazi Party itself. And so there, soon after Hitler aggrandized a great deal of power to himself and established his dictatorship, his original thugs, his supporters, the brown shirts, and the Ernst Röhm, the street fighter, and he had a big fight because Ernst Röhm was a diehard socialist. And they fought. And he said to Hitler, how could you be doing business with all these capitalists when we are supposed to be such pure socialists? But Hitler was far smarter than Ernst Röhm. He knew that he continued to need the big capitalists to advance the Nazi agenda. And so he never outright attacked the big capitalists. He worked with them. So Ernst Röhm and the other diehard socialists in the SA, the brown shirts, rebelled. As a result, they were exterminated in the Night of the Long Knives, which you should study one day. When Hitler's SS lay in wait for the SA, who were in a male bacchanalia on a certain lake in Germany with each other. The SA, as you see, were oriented in that direction. Study it. It's historical. And the SA leadership were having fun with their boyfriends on a certain lake in Bavaria. The SS lay in wait for them, killed most of them, arrested some of the others, including Ernst Röhm, who was later executed. It's a fact of history. I'm not embroidering. I'm not inventing. I'm giving you a fact of history. What does it have to do with Obama? Everything and nothing. Everything, because it's quite telling to study how Hitler rose to power using, although he said he was a socialist, he used the capitalists to get to power. Okay? And his socialist buddies were very mad at him because he didn't impose his socialism fast enough, so he had them killed. But then, of course, after he had total power, there was another story, which, you know, we're not going to have to give you a whole history lesson right now. And I don't really cover this in my book. I touch on it, but it's irrelevant. What's relevant to this discussion is Obama's Marxist socialist roots and why I define him as not a socialist. That's baby talk. You've heard the word, hey, Obama's a socialist. It doesn't mean anything anymore. When I was talking about socialism radio 10 years ago, nobody had used the word in talk radio that I know of. Nobody had used it. They didn't even know what the word meant. Then all of a sudden, they were all, oh, socialist. Well, there are quite a number of varieties of socialist. You have to define what you're talking about. This nation has been somewhat socialist since the 1960s. Okay? So what variety of it? How virulent is this socialism? I define Obama as a pan-Leninist. That's something you haven't heard about. The golfer doesn't know what the word means. If you say pan-Leninist to the golfer, he'd have to look it up because he hasn't seen it anywhere. If you said it to a wall banger, he would get embarrassed and angry and fire somebody. If you said it to the leprechaun, he propped the words pan-Leninist, the phrase pan-Leninist to understand it. And then you'll understand Obama when he says, we didn't do this just to elect a man. So I want you to play that whole soundbite now, and you'll understand what I mean when I say pan-Leninist if you listen to that soundbite again.
If you are out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House, it was about building a movement for change that lasted for a long time. We will build
building a movement for change that lasts a long time. Now, does that definitively prove he's a pan-Leninist? Of course not. But he certainly gives away an intimation of what I am talking about. And the rest you have to, you know, study to get to the bottom of it. So when you look at the adulation of one-third of the population that gave Hitler the power in Germany, and you hear what I just said? The adulation of one-third of the population that brought Hitler to power. And you look at the adulation of the one-third of the American population that brought Obama to power. You say, well, all right, that doesn't prove anything either, does it? You got to understand that most Germans did not even go along with the crude imagery of the early Nazi party. They didn't even like the anti-Semitism of the early Nazi movement at all. Most Germans were quite polite. They did not go along with the crude images that Hitler was putting out there. Nor were they likely to become involved in or approve of physical violence directed at individual Jews and their property. Did you understand any of this? It was a very small fringe in the Nazi movement that was anti-Semitic to this degree. Many of you don't understand how the leftist thinks of the radical university Lexist. Most of them are maniacs. You think you hear electric cars, you hear Obamacare. These are just minor details to them. They would like to have a complete and total socialist revolution in America, where masses of people were taken out, put into re-education camps, worked to death, and then executed, along the lines of the Red Brigades in Cambodia, or the Red Communist Chinese in China. This is very serious business that we're talking about. You got to understand this. The misery that is felt by society today is directly related to the pacifism that is rampant in our military today, the internationalism that is rampant in our political class today, and the rot that is set in Washington. You understand what I'm saying to you? I don't have to go into a tirade right now to make my point. I don't have to do that at all. We know that the decayed old political system in America is cracking right now. We know that we have to build a new America built on the fundamental values that built America. We know we have to build America based on the basis of achievement, strength, will, struggle, freeing the genius of the individual personality. But you don't hear any of this rhetoric coming from any of the politicians, do you? You hear it in crude form, but not really in the way I just put it to you. How can the strength of the nation be improved is the question. Do you think Obama can rescue the common strength of the nation? I don't. I think that he has ruined the nation in the 2 years he's been in power. And I believe the only thing that can save America will be to select the best Americans irrespective of their race or their sex or their sexual orientation based on their achievement, their strength, their will, their ability to struggle, their ability to work, so we can free the genius of the individual personality. That's what we need in America. And the only way we can do that in order to increase the material value of the individual is to increase the moral and spiritual value of the individual first. The moral and the spiritual value of the individual has almost died in this country. Has almost died in this country.
Savage.
Debt ceiling talks, more and more and more, more in circles and more attacks. The August 2nd deadline is drawing closer and closer. Now a proposal is being offered by the so-called Gang of Six. Well, who are the Gang of Six? What does it matter? Former Chief of Staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, David Addington, is here to talk with us about it. You see, he's a domestic and economic policy advisor for the Heritage Foundation. David Addington, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much.
Well, briefly, what are all the plans out there that are supposed to address our debt and deficit crisis?
Well, I can go through every one of them, but let me make it short for you. Not a single one has been offered that gets the job done. And the job is clear. The job is to drive down federal spending and borrowing and balance the budget while preserving our ability to protect America and without raising taxes. We've had one good proposal from the House of Representatives. We've had four bad proposals from the Senate. The good House proposal, cut, cap, and balance, passed the House with 234 votes, and the Senate then voted not to even take it up. And that's where we stand today.
So what do these plans have in common?
The four bad Senate plans all have in common raising your taxes. the decent plan that passed the House, while it's not perfect, it was a good step in the right direction, has all the right kinds of elements. It cuts discretionary spending, including also cutting inappropriate ways with policy changes, the entitlement programs that are the big programs that have been driving up the cost and driving up America's debt. Then, in addition to the current cuts, they also put a cap on spending over the next 10 years to bring down the proportion of our economy that's taken up and spent by the federal government. And then the third element of the House bill was to pass the balanced budget amendment. In contrast, the Senate proposals have all been either simply let the president borrow more money and do nothing on cutting, or in some cases they do some cutting, but also do hiking of taxes, which, A, the American people don't want hikes in their taxes, and B, as we know from American history, it is a terrible thing to do to cut, to raise taxes in a recession.
Well, why is it so hard to reach agreement on one plan?
The president wants to raise taxes. It's that short and that simple. The problem is not a lack of revenue from taxing yet higher the taxes of American people. Instead, we need to be cutting spending. And the president keeps insisting on taxes to the point where he's now willing to risk the creditworthiness, the full faith and credit of the United States, because he wants to hike taxes.
Is the Gang of Six deal our last shot at a bipartisan solution? Did it improve the situation or make it worse?
Yeah, the Gang of Six plan was a non-starter because it raises taxes. We were disappointed, frankly, with what we found out they're doing for the latest proposal from Speaker Boehner, because it basically fails to meet the objective of driving down spending and borrowing without raising taxes, because the latest plan would be a two-step process under which the president would for sure get to borrow another $1 trillion in two parts, a $325 billion part that he'd get right away and $675 that he'd get later by just asking for it because Congress will never override it. But what do the people get in that deal? They only get $1.2 billion in discretionary cuts over 10 years. That may sound like real cuts, but it isn't. It's backloaded, so very few of the cuts occur early on. And they don't include any changes to reduce the cost of entitlement programs. So you're not making any progress long-term on driving down the debt. Then as the second step, they say, well, we're going to create a joint select committee of Congress, and it's going to solve our problem that we haven't been able to solve the last 40 years by recommending $1.6 trillion reduction in our debt by November 23rd, and then we'll have Congress vote on it. But that plan says that the committee is going to have a combination of tax hikes and spending cuts to get the debt down. And again, we don't need tax hikes. What we need is strong spending cuts. So we're not making progress. And basically, President Obama, who's put nothing on the table, meanwhile, Boehner in the House, Republicans, have now started negotiating with themselves, and they're offering something that goes further towards the Obama-Reid, let's tax everybody proposal.
Well, what role do you think tax reform should play in this situation?
Well, tax reform is a good thing, but let me emphasize, it's important what you mean by tax reform. It should be revenue neutral. It shouldn't increase anybody's taxes. But there are a lot of good changes that you can make in the U.S. tax code if you make them all at once, to broaden the base of who's paying taxes, but at the same time drop the rates that people are paying. And as a result, you can get a very good pro-growth tax policy to generate economic activity, which generates jobs. And so tax reform would be an excellent part of this now. The problem is nobody's proposals contain true tax reform, revenue-neutral tax reform that's pro-growth to create jobs.
Well, would the Gang of Six plan really reconcile the debt problem, or just push more difficult decisions further into the future?
The Gang of Six plan doesn't solve the problem. For starters, it didn't catch fire and hasn't got the votes. But particularly, its problem is it raises a substantial amount of taxes, and it is not clear at all that the American people want any more taxes, and certainly that would face a skeptical House of Representatives at a minimum.
What is the best case scenario in your mind for the August 2nd deadline?
Well, the best-case scenario is the president comes to his senses and stops insisting on tax increases. The House and the Senate and the president ought to be able to get together on an intelligent proposal to reduce spending in a way that's consistent with our country's needs and not go and increase taxes in a recession, which is just going to cut investment and cut jobs and put this country deeper into trouble. And, of course, if we have less economic action and fewer people with jobs earning a paycheck, you get less revenue into the government, and our problem is that much worse.
David Addington, thanks again for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The kind of tremendous hope that America felt with the election of Barack Obama, they're still out there. People still want to believe that government has this transformational power, and it does, but we need the leadership that can make it happen. We still have the capacity to do that now, and that's why I say the criticism is really about hopes that have not yet been realized and the intention to make sure they get realized while we have a president who we do want to support.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. The questions for the Savage Nation today are, which book or movie changed your life? Which book or movie is considered great by the mainstream media, which you feel is overrated? Do you remember coming out of a movie when you were a kid that was they have different words for it today. I think Obama uses the phony word transformational. And, of course, he is transforming the White House. Not only did they redecorate it looking like a rental, a place full of rental furniture, taking away any vestige of dignity in the White House, but now they're bringing in dance troops into the White House who will be demonstrating the bump and grind somewhere in the once great White House. So don't think that things have not been transformed by Obama. Not only did he wreck the economy, not only did he destroy NASA, not only did he weaken the military, not only did he water down religion in America, but now he's out to destroy the image of America unto itself. And don't think he's not going to achieve it, by the way, in your lifetime. And so I say to you, did you ever come out of a movie and find your life was altered in some way? You remember seeing a movie as a kid when you walked out and you were in that surreal state and you said, oh, my God, I want to be like that person? And where are the movies like that today when we have the drug-addicted scum of the earth who have taken over Hollywood, who produce one after the other slasher movie? Do I have to go down the list? Do you want me to get angry today? Because I don't want to get angry today. Take a look at what's happened to this country where the only role model for an actress is either that of a drug addict or a degenerate tattoo artist puncturing herself on the weekend while disguising herself as Snow White in the middle of the night in her dreams. The fact of the matter is, the worst minds of our generation have degenerated the culture and the arts to an extent that there's almost nothing left holding on to in the United States of America. The lowest of the low have taken over Hollywood and the media. The vermin of the earth have so polluted the airwaves, and the garbage that comes out of the sewer pipe of Hollywood has now so permeated America that there's not a movie worth going to. You certainly wouldn't want your children to go in there to come out as a pervert or as a slasher or a drug addict, would you? So I ask you, which movie was transformational in your life? Who did you come out wanting to be like after seeing a movie? Or which book have you ever read that changed your life? Did you ever read a book that made you into something else? I did. I can name a few of them. I read magazines that changed my life. And so therefore, at this juncture, I will take a quick, no break, no, not now, can't do that. I just got started on the Savage Nation. As you well know, I'm a famous author. I began this segment by reading a list. I don't have them, and I'm not going to do it again. My voice is a little bit on the laryngitis side. But I've written 25 or so books. Oh, only five of them were on the New York Times bestseller list. But that doesn't count to the vermin in the media. What counts is a book that bashes America, not a book such as Liberalism is a Mental Disorder or The Enemy Within or the new one coming out, Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. Those aren't real books. Real books would be those that attack your mother, your father, your grandmother, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, the Constitution. You know, books like that, now that's a real book. A book by Nancy Pelosi that sells 300 copies, although she had all the publicity in the world. Now that's a real book. A book by Hillary Clinton, now that's a real book. Those are real books, not books by conservatives like Michael Savage. So I go way back with my books, and books have transformed me, and so have magazine articles. A magazine that tried to make boys into men is what I read as a boy, and I try to become a man as a little boy because I knew that's what I was expected to become. It was not left up to me to decide what I wanted to be. My sexuality was not considered to be ambivalent. I wasn't told that I was a creature that can go any way, make it with a man, make it with a woman, make it with a dog. No, I was told to get married and have children because that's the way of the world. So you see, I'm kind of an old-fashioned type of guy. I read Boy's Life as a boy. I didn't read Metrosexual Life as a boy. And so, therefore, that was one of the magazines I liked. I liked reading my father's magazines, Argosy, another men's magazines for working-class men. Actual real men who stayed home with the wife and children at night. That's when America was great. All right, let's move on. Here's a good story for you who are germophobic. I'm a germaphobe. As anyone sneezes, I leave the room. I was in a house of worship 3 weeks ago. Everything was going well till a sneezer appeared 2 rows ahead of me. I left. That's all. God would have to understand, I figured. But it was not just a sneeze. I'm not talking about a dust sneeze. This was a mucosal sneeze that could have infected the entire house of worship. And the guy didn't do it once. He did it 5 times. That's it. Goodbye, Charlie. I was out of there. So I'm a germophobic in that regard because I say to people, I don't shake their hand. I do the ghetto thing with the fist. It's a smart thing. It's very Chinese. I like it. People try to shake my hand. Now I do the ghetto thing like a basketball with the fist. They laugh. I said, well, I do it because I don't have to touch your hand. I said, they're smart. The Chinese shook their own hand. They were even smarter yet. You went to shake it. Remember the ancient pictures? They'd shake their own hand. They were, well, I need to touch your hand? What's handshakes about? So, anywho, I don't, if I'm in a room, a sneeze, a cough, once is okay. But if it's very fluid, there's a lot of fluid, I leave. I don't like, because I know it's spraying. Even from high school days, they showed, how come in my day, if they showed a sneeze, they showed it in slow motion, and how far a sneeze spread the germs. Like a whew, like 12, 15 feet, right? You knew to avoid. My mother said, don't use a public water fountain. And there were other kids that stick their mouth fountain in Queens. They had like stone fountains and like water. And it was always like never a lot of enough water. It was always like within a quarter of an inch of the spout. There was always like a schmuck who'd put his mouth over the, he'd like suck on it. You'd think the guy was crazy. I wonder where those kids wound up. They have to have wound up working in government somewhere. I don't mean for Obama. Let's not get absurd. Like the MTA, something like that. So what I'm getting at is I've always been germophobic, and I read a story today that Norway has practically wiped out the superbug that was infecting the nation and has made Norway one of the most infection-free nations in the world. And take a guess what they did to wipe out the superbug in Norway. It's not that they took a drug. It's not that they ate certain foods. It's not that they exercised. It's not that they instituted Obamacare with another incompetent doctor telling you nothing and to go home and take an antibiotic. It's the opposite. Do you know what they did to eliminate the superbug? Do you know what they did to eliminate the contagious staph infection that had been killing tens of thousands of patients in the most sophisticated hospitals of Europe, North America, and Asia this year? Norwegians stopped taking antibiotics. In fact, it became a crime for a doctor to prescribe an antibiotic unless it was a medical necessity. Now, how many doctors in this country will have a patient come in with a sort of non-specific symptoms of a cough, and they'll give you an antibiotic. And the patient, you know, doesn't know any better, and they take it. And I tell people, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection you have? Duh, I don't know. I said, well, you may be making it worse with an antibiotic. And they look at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. But now Norwegian doctors know what they're talking about. And they prescribe fewer antibiotics than any other country, so people do not have a chance to develop resistance to these antibiotics. And that comes down to the whole story. A doctor says there, if I treated someone with an infection in Spain with this penicillin, I would probably be thrown in jail. And rightly so, because it's useless there. It's a type of penicillin they use on a very specific type of infection. And they say Norwegians now are sanguine about their coughs and colds, toughing it out through low-grade infections. We don't throw antibiotics at every person with a fever. We tell them to hang on, wait and see, and we give them a Tylenol to feel better. Now, I don't use Tylenol. I don't use drugs like that because they're toxic. They're liver damaging, in my opinion. They're absolutely to be avoided, most of these drugs, incidentally. Particularly if you have a hangover, don't you dare use any of those over-the-counter medications. If you have to use anything, use an aspirin. Don't go near those other acetaminophens. You're just going to wind up with a liver transplant eventually. They're toxic to the liver. They're toxic to the kidneys. I've been saying this for 15 years. I've been writing about it for 15 years. I didn't do the original research, but I knew enough to study the original research and to publicize it. And so in Oslo, Norway, they have soothing but non-medicated lozenges, sprays, and tablets. All workers are paid on days they or their children stay home sick. And drug makers aren't allowed to advertise, reducing patient demands for prescription drugs. Now compare that to America, where every other ad is for a medication, primarily for painkillers. Every other medication is a painkiller in America. Every normal quirk and slight this, they want you to drug it to death, and you wonder why there's such a line for a liver transplants in this country. Anyway, the bottom line is that the use of antibiotics became out of control in Norway, and the staph infections became rampant because of the use of the antibiotics. The staphylococcus became penicillin resistant. And now, because they've cut back on antibiotics for generic use, the people are getting better. And the question is, can Norway's program really work elsewhere? And I don't want to do a medical show right now, but the solution to kill a superbug found in Norway, the solution is cut back on antibiotics. And your take-home message is, the next time Dr. Quack gives you an antibiotic for a cold or a cough, say to Dr. Quack, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection? If Dr. Quack gets mad,